Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 38. This week's guest is Michael Weitzman. He comes to talk to us about pinhole and alternative processes. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 38, Andrew.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You didn't sound very certain when you announced show 38.
I'm 38% correct. That this is show 38. How's your week been, Andrew?
It's been less hectic than it has been of late.
Right.
So I've not been out of the country. I've just been... Well, I have actually. I've been to Cardiff. That is out of the country, of course.
Oh, I love Cardiff.
You've never been.
I haven't. You're right.
You need a passport before you can go to Cardiff. So I went to Cardiff and went to a conference for 2 days, and then I've been working at home the rest of the week. But I did some. I managed to get in the dark room earlier in the week. I think maybe Sunday or Saturday, and made some postcards of a pinhole image. Cool. I took of my, I made my wife get on a seesaw. You know what a seesaw is? Do they call them seesaws in America?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I wondered if you had some weird name for it.
And downers.
So because I'm fatter than my wife, I was able to sit on one end, get her suspended in the air, and then she had to stay like that while I exposed a reality so subtle image of her from right in front of me. So you get this long. You can imagine it, can't you? You know, the long part of the
right
seesaw with her perched in the distance.
Did you put your camera on your side of the handle or the other side of the handle? Do you have handles on it?
Yes, I do have a handle. Yeah. No, it was on the other side of the handle. So you saw the seesaw, which has got flaky paint on it, so it's very graphic, you know.
Right.
Julie's in fact. And I made a small enlargement onto that postcard paper. And sent them off to friends in America. Unfortunately, I didn't send you one because I ran out of time.
That's okay.
So I'm going to be printing some more probably this weekend, and I'll send you one.
That sounds good.
Did you get any photography done? Any pinhole photography?
Well, I haven't. I have not this week. I haven't done anything this week. I've been busy with work, and this weekend is going to be my weekend. I'm pretty busy from now until the new year. As soon as the new year gets here, I'm going to be completely done with all of my developer and fix and everything. And then I'm going to do the big switch over and start doing the Ilford stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of trying to milk what I had, you know, just get the last little bit left.
Have you been in the darkroom at all?
No, I haven't. I went out and got it set up. I've gone out a few times. But now that it's so cold, it's hard for me to get out there because I've got to figure out a way to maintain my heat in there, at least get it warm enough to keep chemicals warm enough to develop, you know.
So yeah, I used to use one of those warming trays, you know, it's big enough to hold 2 or 3 8x10 trays, and it just heats up, you know, so it keeps your
That's a good idea.
Chemicals warm. You can pick those up on eBay probably.
Well, that'll tie us right back into this. This week's guest is Michael Weitzman. Michael, do you have a warming tray for your chemicals?
You better believe it.
So this week's guest is Michael Weitzman. And Michael does a lot with lumen prints. Andrew, what's his specialty?
Oh, I would. Yeah, I mean, lumen prints are on as part of Michael's repertoire. I don't know why I'm talking as though I was Michael, but we can allow him to explain where lumen prints fit into his repertoire. But I would say they're not a major part from not certainly judging by the work Michael you're posting on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group and on Flickr.
Right. The lion's share. Is Lith.
Yeah.
The lion's share of it. And I do occasionally a straight print, but I'm finding it harder and harder to even do a straight print anymore.
I think
Lith has just taken over for you.
well live in terms of plastic cameras and pinholes. Yes, I'd say so.
I think looking at
it's probably the best way to express myself. I think
that's what comes across in your work, Michael. And I mean, if anyone out there is not familiar with Michael's work, then we're going to be referring quite a lot to his images, as we have been doing of late with previous interviews. So you can follow along a lot of the images that I'll be talking about on Michael's Flickr site, but you may follow him on Instagram and of course in the Lensless group. But if you want to pause the podcast and go away,
we'll wait.
We'll wait for you to come back. Don't be too long though.
Okay, but, so you're back.
You're back. Hello. Yeah. But Michael, I think what struck me when I first became aware of your work was the consistent nature of it, the dreamlike nature of it, the sheer imagination, creativity, and beauty of it. So, I mean, how did you arrive at this particular style and look? What was the journey that brought you to where your level of image making and creativity is today?
Well, first, thank you for that, Andrew. I don't know. I think I just wanted to try and be experimental in a lot of my different types of photography that I do. I wanted to just go out on a limb and try new things. I came from a background of shooting digital, and I only did it for a short while. And I just found it very boring, and I just couldn't really, find my niche in it. And then I shot and developed regular photographs, and I just felt that the lift and then the other processes that I do was a better way to, articulate my feelings.
But you surely didn't go from picking up a digital camera to suddenly doing lift printing, did you?
No, I did. I did straight printing for a while. I did do a straight silver gelatin. Yeah. I work as a volunteer in a dark room, so I had a lot of experience in there.
Yeah, I gotcha. So, were you doing pinhole when you were doing these silver gelatin prints still, and then you kind of devolved into the lift with pinhole and toy cameras?
Well, I did. I started the pinholes probably when I went to Europe. I went to Venice, Italy, and I bought a 6x9 and shot just with the zero and the I had a Fuji X100T, and those are the only two cameras I took to Venice. So that's where I started my pinhole journey, I'd say. And then from there, it evolved. I made some homemade cameras, but not very fond of the paper negative. So I like enlargements.
Right, me too. So. Andrew likes paper negatives, but I'm not that. It's not that big of a deal.
Well, no, I'm an admirer of the work that people do with it, but I'm crap at it. Excuse my French. Because I've not really devoted enough time to it. Film really is film and silver gelatin printing really is where I'm at. But it's not about me. Carry on, Michael.
Recently I listened to a podcast you had with Andrew Sanderson. Yep. And he had I know he does a lot of work with paper negatives, and he suggested, or he maybe even does it, where he actually uses the paper negative in the enlarger and then blows it out onto the paper beneath. And I found that to be fascinating, and I went ahead and did a couple of photographs that way as well.
And it worked out?
So that was, yeah, it worked out. You have to give it a lot of exposure, but it does work out. It's just something.
You were putting the paper negative in the enlarger head. You're not talking about contact printing.
I'm not talking about contact.
Because Andrew did talk about putting it in the enlarger, didn't he? That's what you're talking about.
That's right. And I use a glass negative carrier, so it remains flat. And typically I buy 5x7 Ilford grade 2 paper, and I use a quart paint can that I trim it so it'll fit in there nicely. And it's so it's a 5x7, it's actually a 4, 4.5x7 negative.
I was talking about those quart paint cans a while ago. Someone had asked me, well, it's the cheapest way to make a camera. And I was like, go to Lowe's and buy one of those quart, empty quart paint cans. They're like $1.50 at the hardware store.
How much is a quart?
Empty and clean, $1.50.
I didn't even know you could buy empty paint cans.
Yeah, they sell gallons and quarts. And if you go and just get a quart one, all you have to do is literally just poke a hole in it. Put your paper in it, you know what I mean? And boom, there you go. You're ready. So,
well, you know, you're so much more advanced in the United States of America than we are in the United Kingdom.
I'm sorry. You should get a 1,000 milliliter can. Is that?
Oh, a liter, you mean?
Yeah.
A liter, right.
Half a quarter of a liter can.
You're really confusing me.
Yeah, me too. So, anyways,
Andrew was an excellent guest, and he's a regular contributor on the Lensless in the Lensless Facebook group. So, and in fact,
right.
He has a book. Well, he has a few books, but I've just got a new one from him, which is on Blurb. You know, the self-published site. It's quite a small little self-printed book, but it's called Paper Negative Photography: A Guide to Making Camera Images Without Film, second edition.
Mm-hmm.
So this is quite a small book. I'm going to wrap it up and put it under the tree and give it to myself for Christmas.
There you go.
But it talks about, there's a title here, a chapter here, about applying pencil, I think, to the back of the paper. So that enables you to increase the density of certain areas. Oh, pencil shading. There's a chapter called pencil shading. Flashing, contrast control, types of paper. Go on, Corey.
No, I was going to say, I see here on your website, Michael, that you have an anamorphic section that you've titled Morph. How do you make your cameras? Are you just using roll film, or what are you doing with these? Because I love this picture that you posted of the fork and the deer standing on the hill with the horns.
The best one is that bent railway track with the bridge. That was just amazing.
Right.
So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, there's a funny backstory to that photograph. That's in Montana, where I go back and forth from California to Montana. And I went out on an early morning and set up by this trestle bridge. And right next to the bridge is a little path, a walkway where people will ride their bicycle or walk by. And I had several people that stopped me and asked me if I was a surveyor. And because of I used a Cesari, one of Cesari's cameras, the anamorphic 6x12.
That's a 120 camera, right? Yeah.
Right.
I think he's just redesigned that, hasn't he, and come out with a slightly new version of it.
Yeah, he has. I've got that copy too, and I like them both. But oddly enough, I like the first one better. I don't know why. I just do. It's I still have to crop it regardless of which camera I'm using, and it just works for me that way.
I mean, obviously, Instagram likes square things. I know you can post, you can adapt it to post wider shots, but this the one of the railway track with the bent tracks and the one you're talking about, is that like the center part of the image you get on your 6x12? Is there bits either side of it, or?
That's accurate, yeah. Andrew. Yeah,
I know that you. I understand where the image of the fort came from. But how did you get the image of the deer? Did you just have a deer in your backyard that was just standing there, or do you have like a?
Well, in Montana, you have all kinds of stuff crawling around.
Right.
But this was actually I titled it Monarch of the North, and to simulate a bull elk.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bull elk, of course. It was a large sculpture in somebody's large ranch.
That's cool.
And it was actually larger than life, so maybe 1 1/4 scale.
So it's like 8 feet tall.
And that's right. And that's without the antlers.
Holy cow!
It was big. Yeah.
What's
I was like, wow, he's good, man. If he got it.
You don't see too many wildlife shots on Pinhole, yeah. Do you?
Pinhole anamorphic wildlife, right. Shots, you know? Yeah,
yeah, gotta be.
Well,
I said,
the truth came out finally.
I was like, we gotta get this guy on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should have said it was a real deer, you know?
I would have believed it. It looks like it, you know?
It does.
So wildlife pinholer and a fork tamer.
What's the main difference between those two anamorphic cameras, Michael? Is it quantifiable, or does one just feel better than the other?
Well, the latest version is a little bulkier, and to be honest, I haven't given it a really good chance to see what it can do. I've been shooting so many other cameras, and I kind of bounce around all over the place, That theme that I was working on was strictly in Montana, and not so much down here in California. But the first one there was severe tapering on the negative, so you had no choice but to crop in. But for some reason, it's a smaller camera. It just feels better in the hand.
Help us out here, Michael. I've not held one of Cesare's cameras in my hand. The closest I've come to it is my truffle cam, which is a box, a circular box thing with a pinhole in the lid, and I'm never really sure where to point that pinhole. Where do you point the pinhole?
Well, believe me, I had a lot of trial and error, and mostly error at that. I had to figure it out, and finally, I decided I may have read something somewhere on Flickr, even. It was a diagram, and it made a lot of sense to me when I saw it, that you would measure where the pinhole is, where the light comes in, to the very top of the film plane. And then the other, you would draw lines so you could see where your composition would go based on the bottom and the top of the film plane. Mm-hmm. And I draw those lines on the periphery of the camera. And that's my guide. That's my guide in getting a composition.
There you go, Andrew.
So, but let me just say, when it works good when you're at least 20, 30, 40 feet away. When you get in tight, like a 8 foot, 10 foot shot away, then it's a little tricky, because then you have to adjust it so that it'll fit right. Yeah. And
it gets
a lot of trial.
It gets wacky when you get really close.
Well, I'll give you an example, that the one with the trestle bridge that Andrew mentioned. I shot two rolls to get that picture. Wow. And so two rolls is what, 12 shots?
Yeah.
10 shots, 12 shots. And a lot of them go in the garbage pail, you know. So it's a lot of trial and error. And each time I take the photo, I'll re-examine my lines and actually make new ones until I can figure it out. But the sweet spot seems to be about 20 foot away. I can, the way I've got it scribed right now on the side, I can get a reasonably good composition.
Seven meters.
And by the way, yeah. But this one I flipped on its side. I wanted, instead of doing it the typical way, which is like a horseshoe, a big curve, I wanted to twist it on its side, and that's how I got that warping.
It's cool.
Yeah, thanks.
Great shot.
It's mind-bending. So, I mean, are you preconceiving many of these images? I mean, anamorphic, I know it's a lot of trial and error, but let's just put anamorphic to one side and just consider some of the other images, you know, that particularly your portraits, the one with figures in, you know, that and a lot of the buildings, it's a very dreamlike state. And, you know, are you going out and conceptualizing these images, or how are you putting these things together, particularly your portraits?
Well, sometimes I do, like the one that Corey mentioned about the fork. I knew what I wanted to do with that and make that happen. That's basically a macro shot. And I stuck this fork in a crack in the ground. And then I had another one that you may have seen with a orb, like yep. a glass mm-hmm. orb. That it's the same thing. I brought that with me and I put it up there. And so I've used some objects and I've had some ideas. But really, the way it goes for me is I take the photograph. I'm like a farmer. I harvest the images and I bring them home. And then I go through it. I filter it out. And once it gets into the dark room and I see the negative, I get an aha moment. And I figure this is what's going to work. And then I go into the dark room and that's where it really explodes. That's where it goes, you know, like way out there. And that's the way I like it. So I post-visualized. That's kind of a long-winded answer. Yep. But that's it.
Yeah, I think to be able to pre-visualize these... You must be a sheer genius, instead of just a genius, post-visualization and the work in the darkroom. But I suppose that leads us neatly on to lith printing, Michael. Many of these, I don't know what proportion of the images that you post are lith printing. You want to tell folks out there a little bit about the lith printing process and why it's a perfect partner for you for these sort of pinhole and Holger images?
Well, the lith process, it adds a lot of texture and actually it adds a drama to the scene. I can alter the image by adding colors through toning, and I can really make an ordinary image into something that's sublime to me. The process starts with basically triple exposing under the enlarger your negative onto the paper. So for instance, if you have a 10-second exposure as a base, meaning that you would take a TIFF strip and expose it, and it looks good under that, you're judging the highlights. Yeah. But if it looks good at the 10 seconds, then you would just multiply. And you don't really multiply. You double the 10 to 20, then 20 to 40, and 40 to 80.
So it's three stops.
But
you're talking in stops, aren't
right.
you, really? Yeah.
I am talking in stops. But not all papers behave that way. That's one caveat. The FOMA papers do, but there's an Ilford paper I use called MG300 yep. Art. I don't know if you've ever tried it. Okay. That will lift, and it's that's about two stops, and it's judged differently. So once I've exposed it, let's say three stops or two stops, and then I'll put it into the chemistry, and then I'll watch for the highlights will develop. And what I'm really looking for is when the shadows creep in.
So these are RC papers, not fiber-based papers, right?
No, sir.
They're
all
fiber.
Fiber.
Okay, cool.
I don't really do anything with RC other than paper.
I'm not sure if – are there any lithable resin coated papers? I'm not sure there are.
I don't know. That's why I was asking, because I have no idea.
I think there are. I mean, there's folks that use it. As I said before, I'm a volunteer in a darkroom facility, so a lot of people are trying out inexpensive papers and even older papers. And RC does work, so that's, you know, if you wanted to try it, that would be.
I've not used the multi-grade art paper. That's a textured paper, isn't it?
It's a beautiful paper. Yeah, it's got they call it some kind of a sheen, egg sheen, or I think that's what they call it, egg sheen. But it's a beautiful textured paper, lovely to hold in your hand.
It must be 20 odd years since I made a lith print, and then I was using Kentmere Art Classic, which was a textured paper, but it was very heavy in yeah. cadmium, I think. And so they had to change the formula, and then it was eventually withdrawn, I think, because of the things it was in it, the cadmium. Did you ever use that?
Right.
Kent Mir Art Classic?
No. No, I've used some older papers. I still have a stash of Kodak Ektelur, which is another Sublime paper. Yeah, papers from yesteryear, they're getting harder and harder to find. People are buying them up. There's really only a handful of papers that work today.
I think for folks wanting to get into, to combine pinhole work with lith printing and create something just really unique, then I think you could probably, a good place to start, would you think, Michael, would be with the FOMA papers?
Absolutely. I'd say the 131, which is a glossy, or the 132, which is matte, which is my favorite, really.
Well, I've just bought, because I was, as I'm getting back into it as well, and I've bought 10 sheets of 131. And so I'll be, I don't know how sensitive it is. I'm going to be using my red safe light. I've got two safe lights, but I'm going to be using the red safe light, and I'm going to do a safe light test. Because, Michael, you know, this paper's going to be under that safe light for a while, isn't it? Or maybe under a safe light torch. Are you using a safe light torch to judge those blacks?
I use a safe light. I have a dark room here at the house. And I also, when I go to the art center, I use, you know, they have a yellow light in there. That's fine. And most of my exposures are, with the papers I'm using, they're under, you know, 4 minutes. Sometimes I'll get one that's eight, and that's usually because it's the developer is getting exhausted. So as it exhausts, you have to, you know, develop longer.
And as the developer exhausts, you get different image colors as well, don't you, from memory?
You can. You also get artifacts, which may or may not be wanted. I have a paper I've just started using, which I really love, because of the texture that I'm getting, and it's very similar to a FOMA 123, which was a discontinued paper.
Yeah,
this paper actually is cheaper than the FOMA 132 or 131. It's Oriental Fiber, and it's called what do they call it? Oriental Fiber Glossy. I think that's what it's called, Glossy.
I mean, Oriental paper. It's been around a long time, I think. Oriental paper, isn't it?
It has, but I think it's they've changed the emulsion several times. And, okay. And by the way, it comes in a...
Sorry, Michael, I missed you there. Lost you there. Are you still there?
There? Okay.
Yeah.
I had somebody tried calling me, intercepting us.
That's okay.
It came in a warm tone and a cool tone variety, and I prefer... The only caveat is that it's glossy. However, I've learned a way to tame that so I can make it into a matte. So that's my latest and greatest paper.
Hmm.
Gotcha.
The FOMA paper, I should give you the backstory on it. The FOMA paper that was discontinued was 123. And that was my all-time favorite paper because of the grit. It was kind of like a charcoal drawing. And I really liked the texture I was getting. And then when I found out that they discontinued it, I panicked. I was scrambling all over the United States to find the paper and bought whatever I could. Most of it was already going fast. And then I was really in a jam. So I decided to go overseas and went to a place, I believe it was in Ireland or maybe in the UK also. And then in Germany, and I bought the whole stock. I bought it all.
Well, Michael, if folks out there want to go and look on your Flickr site in particular, I was looking at a good example, I think. I think there are many examples, but there's an image you have on your Flickr site, Michael, called Chameleon. And it's made with FOMA 123.
Let me try to follow you on that, Chameleon.
Yeah.
Oh, that's self-portrait. Okay.
Is that you? There's a figure to the left-hand side, and then there's a big, heavy area of black, right, and then some trees. And I thought, yeah, that looks like you're getting this charcoal effect, which is quite a bit different from some of the other effects. And then I was looking at some of your other pictures. So this is with FOMA 123, and just selenium tone. But actually, when I look at some of your FOMA 132 pictures, which is the one, the paper that's still readily available, you apply a carbon toner to it, and then you get a similar effect. That's what it seems to me. The image goes a bit more charcoal-y.
Well, yes and no, Andrew. The way it works is to get different colors or more vibrant colors, I bleach back. So I'll bleach back into the highlights,
yep,
and sometimes into the midtones, but not for very long. And that's, yep, that's the trick. If you go too long, you'll bring it back to that sort of drab olive green, sort of light brownish color that you see in the 1-2-3. With FOMA 1-3-2, I can go to a very brilliant orange. And there's also additives you can put in to intensify the color.
I've seen the bright orange. I've seen the bright orange effect as well. Is that just with some bleaching?
No, it's kind of a poor man's way of doing it. That's just elevating the temperature of your developer.
Huh. Oh, I've got so much to learn. Corey, yeah, Corey, this process is full of variables, and you can just spend a lifetime on it, I think.
What you're
watching, you heavily overexpose or three stops overexpose the print, and then you put it in your tray and you're watching it, you ideally with a little safe light torch, and you're watching the blacks, aren't you, Michael? And this process is called infectious development, and it means once the blacks start building up, so your exposure controls the highlights, so then the shadows are controlled by this infectious development process. So you have to snatch the print out of the developer and throw it straight into the stop bath at a point you judge to be correct for the image that you want. So you can you can let the blacks go completely deep, or you can, if you've got a delicate effect, you can snatch it early. And that presumably will also infect the density of the highlights. If you're pulling it early, you'll get presumably brighter highlights. Am I on the right track here, Michael?
Yeah.
Am I
talking, you are on the right track, and it also rubbish. Helps with... It also helps with the toning aspect of it, because I use several toners to bring out all kinds of colors, from like these blues, very subtle blues, and
the gold, funnily enough, brings out blue, doesn't it? Is it the gold that brings some blue to it?
Yes, that's right. Gold toner does. It sure does. Carbon toning is also interesting. On certain papers, it'll also bring out a very cool, coolish type of hue to it, similar to gold toning. Hmm. So it's kind of an interesting toner to work with.
So if I buy some carbon toner and use it in conjunction with this FOMA Tone 131, what tips can you give me, or anyone else buying some FOMA Tone 131?
Well, you said it right. The three stops over in terms of the toning part.
Yeah, toning.
Specifically, it just depends on how you want to do it. You could do it globally, or you could do it selectively. Mm-hmm. I do it both ways, and it's just to get a different effect. You can also use a resist. It's called Frisket. Frisket is a...
Oh, yeah, I know. That's the stuff you coat. You're coating the areas you don't want the toner to stick
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
okay.
And it works very well. It's you can get it in any art store. Yeah. And if you're on a budget, you can use probably just rubber cement.
I was going to say, I used to use rubber cement with sepia toning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You see, I've never used any of this material because whenever I've used toners before, I've tended to use them quite selectively. I've used selenium and thiocarbamide or sepia toner together, on the basis that bleaching back slightly and then in the sepia bath or the thiocarbamide bath, it is attacking or toning both parts of the images, but it has more visible effect straight away in the highlights. So then I'll wash the print and then I'll stick it in the selenium bath, because the selenium darken works the other way, doesn't it? It starts in the shadow, so you get this interesting split tone. So different toners affect different parts of the image.
There was a paper once upon a time called Slavich. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
I have, yes.
That was a great paper. It was a cold tone paper, and I used to gold tone it when I was in Montana. I'd take images in the snow and to give it that, you know, that cold feeling, that sensation. I'd gold tone it, and the gold toning went into the mid tones, and it even went into the harshest of shadows, which was the most amazing thing I was able to do with that paper. That paper is no longer around, so at least not by me.
Bummer.
Andrew Solison's probably got a stash of it somewhere.
He's listening. He's listening. Rubbing his hand on top of it. He's like, "Oh yes."
Well, he should be listening because this show's turning into a darkroom episode, isn't it?
But I have to say, there's a lot of great inspiration on from your past guests and Karina Horman with her light trails from the sun. And
yeah. I'm going to get out and try some of that soon. That's my plan.
The trouble with doing this podcast every week is I've now got so many things to try. I'm getting the sweats just thinking about it, you know, because I can't home in on one thing, which is why I think I'm going to just focus on pinhole and toy cameras and lith printing.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, this year.
Are
you going to have a go at lith printing? Are you going to have a go at lith printing, Corey?
I don't know. Maybe I have so much stuff that I have to print just
normally
straight gelatin, you know, silver gelatin prints that it'll probably be at least a year before I could get to where I could. I never really got into doing much of the toning stuff. I don't know. I mean, I like it. It's beautiful. I love seeing what everybody's doing. But for me, maybe just because I haven't been able to put enough time into it to really get results that I would want. You know what I mean? So I'll see. Maybe. Are you going to try it, Andrew?
Yeah, the chemical options out there for folks listening. There are several. I bought the chemical I used years ago, made by PhotoSpeed, LD20. And there's our friend in, I'm going to say Germany, is that correct? Wolfgang Mersch? Morsch?
Yep, that's right.
He's really he's Mr. Lith, isn't he?
He and Tim Rudman in the UK. Those are both the godfathers of Lith.
Yeah. I met Tim Rudman earlier in the year.
Have you?
I went to his exhibition with Graham from Sunny 16. That's it.
Negative Sunny.
The Negative Sunny 16 podcast.
I'm sorry you had to spend the day with Graham.
Yes, it was the first time I'd met him, and it was just me and him. We went on a date to see a Tim Rudman exhibition of his prints from Iceland.
And, yes, I have his book. Yeah.
Yeah, but he did a question and answer session. We chatted with him. We had a private, well, not just me and him, there was about a dozen of us with a sort of small private viewing, and he was wandering around chatting to us, and it was just the most fantastic, inspirational thing. But I have Tim Rudman has his book, doesn't he, on lith printing, so I have that.
He has a few books, I think.
He does, yeah. And I think he updates stuff online as well. So I think if you do a Google search on lith printing, you can find some recent updates from Tim. And he has a newsletter as well. Folks can follow that. And he does update his followers with what papers are available and different techniques. And I think he was the one to try and combat this phenomenon known as pepper fogging, wasn't he, as well? I seem to remember, where you get these little black spots.
Right, you combat that with sodium sulfite. Yeah. That's one of the remedies. I don't ever get to that point, though. I usually ditch the solution and start all over.
Do you get that when the solution, this sort of black peppery effect, when the solution's getting older?
Well, when I first started lith printing, I did, and I couldn't figure out why and how to stop it. But as it turned out, when I figured out the sodium sulfite helps, didn't help that much, in my opinion. So I opted to just dump my chemistry and
get basically
you're good. You get a new batch. I'm good for about four prints. And that's paper sensitive, meaning that some papers I can get 6 prints out of and some I can only get 1 out of. I have to throw it away after 1.
Are you adding some old weathered developer to the solution before you start? They call that old brown, don't they?
That's right. I used to. I don't anymore. Mm. It's just once in a while, if there's something residual in the tray, a few ounces, I don't care. But I don't make it a habit.
Yeah. Corey.
Yes, Andrew.
You ask some questions because take it back to pinhole photography.
Well, I mean, I love listening to this stuff because, I mean, everything, all the processes that we're talking about, you guys are talking about, can be done on pinhole stuff, I mean, it's not,
I think
strictly held over for traditional lens photography, you can do everything.
I think pinhole is ideally suited to these alternative processes because pinhole, you're almost straight away lends itself to this dreamlike state, doesn't it? This image, the fact that you're, and then you combine it with something that's so creative like lith printing. And, whether you just want to produce images because they just look so damn great, or whether you want to, express some deeper philosophical meaning or apply metaphor to your images, these creative tools just take a normal silver gelatin print and just elevates it in a different direction. Or am I talking bullshit, Michael?
No, I like, you're right. I mean,
right.
Yeah. I like all the shots through this on your website, Michael. You have an album called Through the Pinhole or Through the Keyhole.
That's on your website. That's on Michael's website.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I'm at. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
I really like, but I can't tell. Some of them look like they're pinhole. Some of them I don't think are pinhole. But like the one with the big
Gammon.
The baby's head that you're really close to. The baby's face.
That's actually shot with a little, I believe, 35mm Vivitar.
Really?
Yeah,
it's great.
It's a toy camera, and I usually doctor up these cameras. I take them apart and make them my own by flipping the lens or changing the focal length. So I try to, really make it very individualized. Some of those 4x5 Polaroid film.
Yeah.
So
is that what you have a picture? I think it's a 4x5. Hang on, let me pull it back up here. It is a 4x5 because I can see the edge. Is either that or 5x7? But there's like a boardwalk and the sky is like orange.
Are you still on Michael's website?
Yes, I am on his website. Sorry, I didn't go with the Flickr.
Where are you at? Where are you at exactly, Corey?
On your webpage, under Into Thin Air.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You have a picture that's I don't know if it's pinhole or not, but it just baffles me. I'm so intrigued by it. It looks almost like it was northern lights in the sky, but it orange somehow. Hmm.
Northern lights. I'm not following where you're at, but
there's a boardwalk. Oh, there's some wooden shacks, and then you've got this bright orange, bright orange sky.
I don't know what it is. I don't know how. I don't know how you got it.
This is why I love. This is why I love his Flickr site, because I can go and read the tags and say, that's what it is.
Oh, I see the one you're talking about. That's a
contact print, isn't it?
That, yes, it is. And that's done with a different process altogether called, this is a tongue twister here, chromoscedastic.
Oh, gosh.
And it's another term I've never heard of. Chromo what?
Scedastic?
Chromoscedastic, yeah.
You're just making this up, aren't you?
yeah, of course I am.
And we're just, people are sniggering saying, Those two guys, they're buying all of this, aren't they?
Yeah, what are they talking about?
Chromoskedasic. Go on then. Tell us all about that.
So that's in a ghost town in Montana. And the straight print to me was just an ordinary photograph. And I wanted to make it my own. And by using these chemicals, actually, you expose a print normally as a silver print in the developer. But as it starts to get some shadows, you yank it out and bring it you solarize it.
Oh, okay.
And at the same time, you're pouring this chemistry on. You're kind of going back and forth with it. But what I do that's different is I actually paint it on. That's how you get that kind of like that, how should we call it, a vortex of orange, sort of.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. It looks like it reminds me of the Northern Lights, but just...
Yeah, so I like to get my hand in these, as you can see in all these photographs. I think I even bleached the boardwalk. You can see where it's very white. Midpoint. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. So, I use that in traditional silver gelatin printing, and that's another one of Tim Rudman's tools, isn't it? He calls it liquid sunshine, and so right. I take a very dilute potassium ferrocyanide bleach and a piece of cotton wool, and I'll just pick out some areas, and it just picks up on the micro contrast in the print, doesn't it? And it just picks out, and it just really, if you don't overdo it, it just brings a certain glow and local contrast to scenes. It's great.
There is an art to it. There is an art to doing that, because you have to be careful.
Yeah.
The dilute bleach is key, and then having water on hand to subdue it.
Yeah, you need to stop it and rinse it before you get to the point where you think that's enough. Because if you get that far, you've probably lost your bleach. Yeah. You start to bleach the detail out, don't you?
And it's gone. You can throw it in the trash.
I know.
There's,
been there.
We all know.
There's another picture that I like a lot. It's of a cowboy boot.
There's a couple of cowboy boots.
Yeah. This one has the horse just by on the other side of the guy's foot. The horse is either its legs humongous or that horse is really small.
No, that's one of James's pinholes or the Reality
Subtle.
Reality
Subtle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 4x5, and I really like that camera a lot, and mind you, that boot looks like it's right on top of me, and you know, basically the camera was literally 2 inches away from it.
Oh yeah,
it's got such a wide format.
I love that.
Plus, I used the vertical shutter instead of the. It was oriented horizontally, so I used a vertical shutter to kind of bring in that darkness that you see from the right.
Yeah,
and it's kind of a gradient. This was all stage, of course. I have a few shots with this person and her horse.
This is the one. There's a few cowboy boots. This isn't the one I was looking at earlier, but the one I'm looking at now is called Let's Ride. That's with the Reality So Subtle 4x5.
Right.
And then it's got the horse in it as well. Is that the one you were talking about, Corey? Or is that a different one?
The one I'm looking at on the website doesn't have a title on it, actually, but it's a boot right in the middle, and then just off to the left there's a horse. I like that 4x5. I'm ordering one of those as soon as he gets them, February, I think.
You know, another thing I wanted to talk about was, we may talk about film holders. You carry 4, 5, 6 of them, so you have 12 shots, and it's really not a bulky camera. It may sound like it is, but it's not. And I just put it in a small plastic lunch pail, and I'm off.
Right.
So light kit, you know. And
how does it compare with the Zero? I was gifted a Zero 4x5 with no extensions on it, so it's a real slim camera, really extreme wide angle. And I've not really played with it too much so far, but I don't.
Send it to me.
Well,
I don't know, but I'm going to I can't really speak for the Zeros. I have a few of them, but not the 4x5.
Yeah.
But I'll plug James. James has been a good guy for me. He's bought a few of his cameras.
Yeah. I love his cameras.
I have two, but not 4x5.
I have way too many also. And I'll have 4x5 soon. He's got to make some more, I think. And on his website, it says shipping in February. So I'm gonna buy myself one for my Christmas present.
I was very tempted with the Ondu, the latest third edition Ondu 4x5s. They looked as though they'd borrowed some ideas from James, I have to say.
Yeah.
As they've evolved, but they look good. But then I go back onto James's website and I thought, yeah, I think probably that's the one to buy. But I mustn't spend any money.
No. Make it. Make your own, Andrew. Let's send us some pictures of it once you get it made. Foam core. Look, if Toby can make one,
yeah,
a 4x5 out of foam core board,
yeah,
you can do it, Andrew.
I know.
Now, is he using film or is he putting paper in there?
I think he's putting paper and he's paper, doing like a box in box design. Okay. Yeah, he's doing the box in box. Toby,
people are talking about there's been a bit of chatter on the Facebook group about the Harman Obscura. I think, do you have the Harman Obscura box in box 4x5?
Do I have it?
Corey, I think. No, Corey, did you not have one?
No, the only one I have is I have Todd's Box Turtle, which is the.
Okay, I think that's similar.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Just the one I have is a much shorter focal length. It's only like 35 millimeters or something. I think it is centimeters or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But no. I don't have that one.
To something that sums up your work, Michael, is a sentence I wrote down off your website. Transforming the mundane into something intriguing. I think would that be? Is that something behind pretty much every image you post to visualize?
Yes, it would be. For me, it's really about making it my own, and finding ways to communicate a different narrative to the viewer. So,
sure.
And you have a whole very impressive list of publications and exhibitions, I think, on your website. Is there anything current that we can see your work in?
Well, I just was in a show in New York. It was an alternative process show, but that's over with. And I've submitted for a couple of local galleries in the LA area here. And there's an upcoming plastic, or they call it crappy camera show in New York. So another one for New York, but nothing at the time being. At one point I was on fire. I had four or five shows at once, it seemed like. So.
Well, I'm not surprised. The uniqueness and vision in your image making is blows me away.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you.
The other beautiful technique that I've seen a few of yours, and when I first saw it, I thought, wow, what is that? And then, fortunately, Flickr is very helpful. So you have a few images that have this gold look. And, of course, it is. It's liquid emulsion, which I'm kind of familiar with, on glass over gold leaf. And I think, wow. Yeah. So you're using a 4x5 box pinhole. I'm looking at one on your Flickr site with a tree stump. It looks like an image from a World War I from the Somme. It's one of those trees with no leaves on, and there's a bit of moisture in the bottom, and then this sort of gold texture. It's just amazing. And I'd not come across this technique before until I saw you doing it. So you call it an orotone? Is that...
Yes, and historically, it's James Curtis, I think was his name, did a lot of photographs of Native Americans. And
I'm familiar with those. Civil War. Yeah.
So that's there's very little information about it on the internet. So I'm mostly self-taught in all these processes. I never went to any school or any art school for that matter. I just experiment until I figure it out. And it's kind of a, you play the game and figure it out. And along the way, there's a lot of cursing, a lot of broken glass and paper in the trash, but
are you applying gold leaf onto onto a clean glass plate and then pouring your liquid emulsion over that? Is that what's going on?
Not in that sequence, but this is one of the latest processes I've been working at. And actually, that's what I got into a show in New York. So
it's amazing.
And I earned third place. So I was very pleased with something I just started doing. I only had, this is my second piece. So
well, I think it's just because it's so unique looking, isn't it?
Well, the problem with these, when you post them online, is you can't really see the luminance.
No.
The quality of the luminance is, I can't get it because I can't scan it, and I hate going to Photoshop to try to build it up to something it's not.
You need to hold it in your hands, presumably.
You need to hold it, like any other print. You need to hold
does
it.
Does this benefit from having a light source behind it, this sort of print on glass, or?
Not at all.
No.
Because the one I have is it's on black matte board behind it.
Okay.
So what you're relying on your light source from the front.
From the viewing source.
Exactly. And then it's bouncing back, the gold bounces back in your eyes. And if you look at it at an oblique angle, you can actually see the shadow of the tree behind it. So it's kind of very unusual.
Wow.
I'd recommend folks out there to go to Michael's Flickr, flickr.com website, and look up the one we're talking about. I could just stare at this for ages, isn't it? And whipping post. He's missed the G. He's misspelled it and missed the G out. But it's just awesome. And at least Flickr, you can see it at forget Instagram on your phone. Go and look at this on Flickr, and open that bad boy up onto your screen. And I know it's not as good as holding the print in your hand, but yeah, it's just awesome. Words fail me, really. I just love the textures on it and the simplicity of it. Beautiful.
There you go.
Thank you. Yeah, the lion's share of my work is from Montana. I mean, I'm in California now. I'll be going back up probably next month, the end of the next month. But it's all there. It's just a great place to, a beautiful place to photograph.
So get to Montana if you can, everybody.
The only thing I know about Montana is Hannah.
Oh God.
I don't even know where it is. My American geography is better than it used to be because I've been a few times now.
You're really showing your age now with Hannah Montana, Andrew.
No, my daughter probably. My daughter might have been into it. So but surely, Michael, do you hold workshops? Because if you don't, you should do. You could.
I do. Actually, I signed on for two. I just the other day, I was down. I work at the Irvine Fine Arts Center, which is only about 10 miles away from where I'm at.
Is that your sort of day job?
No, I'm retired. My day job is exercising my creativity in either my darkroom at home or I volunteer there just once a week.
Okay. Andrew, that's where you're heading for too, Andrew, right?
Yes, I'm heading there sooner than some people think.
Awesome.
Yes, I can't afford to retire just yet, but I certainly have a plan to spend more time being creative than doing what I'm doing at the moment.
Awesome. Yeah. All right.
I have a friend of mine. You're in Cambridge.
Nearby, yeah.
Okay, my friend's in Lincoln.
Yep.
So he's just up the road.
He's 1 hour or so from me, yeah.
Yeah. So I bet it's a great place to photograph too.
It is. It's
the Fens are there.
Well, you've got the Lincolnshire. You've got the Lincolnshire Wolds, which are it's very fen-like. It's very similar to the Cambridgeshire fens where I am. The landscape around Lincolnshire is also flat, and it's very intriguing, and it's just beautiful. And Lincoln Cathedral. This time of the year, they have a fantastic Christmas market in the cathedral. The cathedral is up on a hillside. It dominates the area, and you can park your car at the bottom and walk up this hill, and they've got the Christmas markets, and it's beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah. It is.
Have you been? Have you spent time in the UK?
I actually went to London with my wife. We went to some museums.
Yeah.
And from there, we took a trip up to Lincoln to see my friend John Bennett. And then from there on to Glasgow. I had another friend of ours from California who was in graduate school in university there in Glasgow.
Well, next time you're in the UK, on your way up to Lincoln, stop in Warboys, which is in the Fens. And
you can, sure, we'll have a pint or two. I know.
Yeah, you can.
I know the routine.
You can come and have a pint in the White in the White Hart.
There's a beer. There's a beer I had there that my friend John jokes with me, and I can't find it here. It's called Timothy Taylor's
Landlord. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I can't find it anywhere around here, and I've been on a quest to find it, but
I think you can get it. It's nicer on draft out of the barrel, but you can. I think you can probably. You can certainly find it here in the supermarkets in bottled ales. You know, you can get a Timothy Taylor Landlord. I got really off my trolley on Timothy Taylor Landlord at my brother-in-law's wedding. I got in so much trouble because I was drinking this stuff. He'd got two barrels of it in, and I started drinking it at 3 p.m. And by eight o'clock, I'd gone to bed, and Julie was saying, where's Andrew? And I was in so much trouble because I was just, I had to go to bed. The room was spinning around. It's not a strong beer, but it's a really one of those sort of session ales that you can keep drinking, you know?
Yeah.
And it crept up on me slowly. I think it was because I'd started drinking before I'd eaten anything. You know, I'd had about 3 or 4 pints before I'd...
You guys are making me thirsty.
Yeah, and me too, but I've got to go out and pick my wife up. Yeah. So.
Well, Michael, thanks for coming. We appreciate you coming and talking with us. And
see, you're making me stop again. What is it with you and your one-hour shows? We're going to have to get you back on, Michael, because this is just brilliant. We'll get you back on after I've give me a year to play with some lith printing, and I'll post a few, and you can tell me where I've gone wrong.
Yeah,
either that or I'll be in the UK. One of the two, whichever comes first.
There you go.
Well, yeah, certainly we have a spare room. I've already Gretchen Hayhurst has got a name to it, and who else? Oh, Diane Peterson. Next time she comes, yeah, you need a passport first. So we have
I have one coming.
We have a spare
room. You don't have one, Corey?
I don't have a passport. No,
it's a bit of a running joke on the show. I keep reminding folks he doesn't have a passport.
That's fine, Andrew. Just keep picking on me.
I like to get my retaliation in first.
You know what's going to happen one day? One day I'm not even going to call you. I'm just going to come to your house and knock on your door. And Julie's going to be like, there's some big, giant, loaf American-looking guy on our front step, Andrew. What's going on? Who's this guy?
That'd be great. You'd be more than welcome.
And then we're going to go out to eat, and I'm going to talk so Southern. Everybody's just going to be beet red.
And that's when you break out the bourbon, right?
Yeah, right. super redneck voice. As soon as we go somewhere, and there's other people around you that you know, I'm going to be going to straight Southern slang.
Well, the fens, particularly up in the areas that are less populated, they do have a bit of reputation of, let's just say, you know what, we're dueling banjos. You know what I'm talking about? You get that?
Oh
reference?
Yeah,
diddling, yeah, doo doo, yeah,
Deliverance, yeah,
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 yeah.
Oof. Yeah, we'll just leave it there.
Yeah, I'll leave it there. All right. So, Michael, if you want to let our listeners know where they can go to check out your work or contact you if they have questions, or
sure, they can email me. It's on my website, michaelweitzman.net. There's an email, bigskyeagle@gmail. On Facebook, you could find me under Michael Weitzman Photographic Arts. Instagram is MW Photographic Arts. And Flickr is under Michael Weitzman.
Awesome.
To be honest, if you just Google Michael Weitzman and say something like Michael Weitzman Instagram or pinholes, that's the easy way, isn't it? Really, you can just find you.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, check out Michael's images on Flickr, particularly these Oratone gold leaf image of the whipping post.
It'll be worth your time, I promise.
It will. And while you're there, you can join the Lenses Podcast Flickr group.
We have one?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been there in so long.
You can follow us on Twitter at The Lensless, which is mainly me.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
In fact, it's not mainly me. It's only me.
It is you.
Corey looks after Instagram for us.
Kind of.
And then you can find us both lurking at The Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah. And there's a new Facebook group too, the Pinhole.
No, it's not new. It's older than ours. It's been going a couple of years.
But we just found it. So
we did just find it, yeah. The Pinhole, Ian Burton and Andrew Atkinson. Yeah, they run that. So those guys run Pinhole Photography Workshops, and they have a great group going, which is similar size to ours. And some of the people are, I think, Michael, you haunt that group as well, do you? I think Pinhole Photography.
Which group was that?
The one that's just called Pinhole Photography. Are you on there? I think you are.
Yeah. And one for you, Andrew, is the Lith Printing Group.
Yeah, I think I'm a member of that, but because I haven't done any of this printing in 20 years, I joined it to get inspiration. And I'll be putting stuff on there as the months go by, but I am a member of that group.
Awesome.
Cool.
Looking forward to seeing it.
At least I think I am. Or am I? Or there's another one called Alternative Processes as well, I think.
Yep, that's a good one too.
Yeah, so I'm certainly a member of that, but I think I'm a member of the Lith one. If not, I will be.
Awesome. So, everybody, have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. And thank you, Michael, for being another really inspirational guest.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you both for having me, and wish you well. Happy holidays.
Yes, you too. Have
Merry
a great weekend.
Merry Christmas.
Yep.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
You and me are still here, Michael. I think we've lost Corey.
Well, carry on.